Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
And it's time now for the Friday Gathering. This week I'm joined in the studio by Martin Hayden, Minister of State at the Department of Agriculture, Food and the Marine, and Fine Gael TD for Kildare South, Jennifer Whitmore, Social Democrats TD for Wicklow, Professor Niamh Harrigan, Sociologist and Vice President of Academic Affairs at Mary Eye in Limerick, and Elaine Loughlin, Political Editor with the Irish Examiner. You're all very welcome. Thank you for being here. Now, Martin, we have to start with you. You were one of the authors of that opinion piece in the Irish Independent about the tax cuts, which has caused such a hoo-ha this week. Willie O'Dea was on the programme there this morning saying he's annoyed about the timing, but also Fine Gael, who don't have the voting power in the Dáil on their own to increase the price of a stamp, are trying to make it seem like any tax cuts will be solely down to them. Nothing could be further from the truth.
No, like I think that if you look back at the article and the opinion piece that myself and my colleagues Peter Burke and Jennifer Carol McNeill had in the Irish Independent on Monday, it was very broad ranging. Obviously, the tax package proposal has been what's got all the focus since then. But at its heart was our view that, you know, we wanted to articulate the view that a lot of our colleagues in the Fine Gael backbenches, in our senators, our councillors, are saying to us, but particularly in our parliamentary party meetings over the last number of weeks, where we talk about, in the context of a big surplus coming down the line, the choices that have to be made down the line and what are key priorities here. And we've outlined, you know, the challenges in housing, the infrastructural deficit, the need to raise the national development plan ceilings. But we also talk about an absolutely core priority is that the surplus that happened didn't happen by accident. We put in place policies that created that environment. But it's on the back of workers, the 2.6 million workers in the country.
But hang on a second. And we are the party of enterprise and reward. You've got the Minister for Public Expenditure in your party. Fianna Fáil have the Minister for Finance. They have a job of work to do. Like, did Leo Varadkar tell you to write this piece? How did it work?
No. We came up with this ourselves. But
and you told him about it in advance.
Yeah, but Leo was aware of it beforehand.
Okay, and he said, yep, great idea. Off you go.
No, he didn't stop us. So, you know, it was fine to do that. But what we were doing was articulating the views that Fine Gael TDs and senators have been making for a long time in terms of our parliamentary party to build on the support that we've given to the squeeze middle to workers in previous budgets.
So when Willie O'Dea says it was a juvenile stroke, what do you think?
Not at all. I think it's a debate that needs to be had. And in the context of this time, it's a seminal moment for our country. We are talking about this year having a budget surplus of 10 billion euro. Next year, that could be up to 16 billion euro. We know some of that will be temporary. And that's why we talk about the need for the anti-austerity fund as well. We laid out very broad ranging points here.
But why did you need to do this? Like, do you think Fianna Fáil don't want to spend any money? Or what's your logic?
No, but this isn't about Fianna Fáil. Fianna Fáil are well entitled and able to articulate.
But you already know that
priorities.
Your own leader is in favour of spending some of that money. He was here on this programme last week. So I don't know where the issue is or where you saw the problem is if you didn't think it was with Fianna Fáil.
So it's not that it was a problem. It was about us as a political party. Yes, we're part of a coalition, but we still have our own identity. And Fine Gael,
that's what it's about. You're trying to carve out your own identity separate to Fianna Fáil.
No, we think every party in the Dáil, not just on the government side, should be clearly articulating what choices they would make in this context. Because the fact is that, you know, there are choices to be made here. And we do believe that supporting the squeeze middle, who are beyond that net of income to get any other state supports, who hit the highest tax rate at a very high level, they need to be supported. We want to put more than 1,000 euro back into their pockets of their hard-earned money.
Okay.
And that's building on what we've done 2 years ago, where that was 400 euro. Last year, it was 830 euro. And we want to do that further. And we outlined the rationale for that. And we believe this is a debate that's very healthy to have in a document.
Okay, a healthy debate, Niamh, or a juvenile stroke?
Two things. I think it was, first of all, a really clear attempt to shore up the Fine Gael voter base in advance of an election. And I think when you look at, you know, our data on the socioeconomic basis of Irish political parties is mixed and hazy, to say the best. But certainly one of the clear differences that's emerging in all the kind of what you call my pulse of the nation research is a very clear difference in sentiment between those who own property and those who are renting. And for those who own property, and we can, I think, surmise that there are a significant proportion of the Fine Gael voter base who do own property, for them, a really significant concern would be tax breaks. I think that has run foul of what has been the historic way that this government has operated its budgeting process since 2016, which is to fly continual kites. The difference about this is, as Eamon Ryan highlighted yesterday, first of all, it's been in public. Second of all, we have had this really significant switch between Minister for Finance and Minister for Public Expenditure. And Fianna Fáil, in exchange for giving up the Taoiseach role, will want to see a very clear Fianna Fáil imprint on the budget this year. So I think it was a slightly kamikaze move. Perhaps, if you remember at the beginning of the year, Claire, somebody suggested, I think, in the Irish Examiner that there was going to be 9 Fine Gael TDs standing down. I think we're now up to 6, even though that was poo-pooed. So one would wonder, maybe, is there a little bit of panic in the Fine Gael ranks, given the fact that you'll have so many new candidates running in the next election? There's a clear need to shore up a voter base here. And I think that was the root, really, of this.
Jennifer Whitmore, you're nodding in agreement to all of that.
I absolutely am. Yeah, this was a clear sign the Fine Gael were just essentially talking to their voter base, and it was a vote getting exercise. That's purely what it was. And I have great difficulty with that, because what we have here is Fine Gael seeing these tax revenues as a slush fund for their own political party purposes. And that is not the way that we should be talking about how we're going to actually spend the surplus that we have. This surplus is precarious, and it has been consistently told that it is not guaranteed. We are going to have to be fiscally prudent with it. And I think what Fine Gael are suggesting is the absolute opposite of being fiscally prudent. And it is, it's not how we should be going about it. There should be a full dole debate on what's going to happen with this money. We need, and the Social Democrats believe, that we should be actually investing this money into the future. It's not something just to gain votes with. It's not something to be used on recurring expenditure. It should be about investing in infrastructure, investing in the Ireland of 10 years' time, 20 years' time. Okay, because we were not guaranteed to have this money forever and a day.
Elaine, the controversy today was about how many people would benefit from this. Fianna Fáil were sceptical about the claim that 1.9 million people would feel the benefit of what Martin and his colleagues were suggesting. Now, Fine Gael has given this programme a statement today, saying that 1.9 million people will feel the impact of this proposal, and this will be progressive and fair.
Yeah, and I think maybe that speaks to the fact that this has been a relatively quiet week politically. You would have expected a bit of kickback to what Minister of State Martin Hayden here beside me and his colleagues said on Monday, maybe going into Tuesday, Wednesday. If it was a particularly busy week, I think we'd be speaking about something completely different today. So maybe that's why it has dragged on. But it is an important issue for both parties. And I think, Claire, you hit the nail on the head when you intervened when Martin said that they are part of a coalition but have their own identity. I think going into the next budget, it'll be critical for all three parties, but especially Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, with an eye to the next election, to carve out their own identity. Because with the Green Party, you can see that they can go to the polls, go to the electorate with wins around carbon budgets and other environmental issues. Whereas I think Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have maybe assimilated very well together in government and, as I said, carving out that niche to differentiate themselves when it comes to the next election could be quite difficult. So I think this is why Fine Gael are going after that tax element. They do see tax as a kind of their policy territory and something that they've commanded for many years. So I think that's maybe partly what was behind what you wrote, Martin, in Monday's paper.
Martin?
So, yeah, look, if I could go back on some of the points that have been made there. First of all, there's been talk about elections. There is no election on the horizon.
But there will be, Martin. Let's face it.
There always is in a general cycle. You have two budgets
pre-election at the very best. So I think you'll want to be putting your stamp on this one, certainly.
So instead of talking about elections, what I'd focus on is our programme for government, which we're halfway through implementing now as a government together. And Fine Gael fought very hardly to have indexation on our tax as part of that for the second half of this government if we had got back on top of our finances after COVID. So really what we're talking about here is the level to which we can do that. And, you know, Fine Gael is the party of enterprise and reward. We do believe in this. And Jennifer, I really welcome your comments there where you say we should have a full dole debate on this. Mm. This is part of what we're trying to do, is generate this discussion, because parties like Social Democrats and Sinn Féin and others in opposition do get in opposition to promise everything to everybody.
What about the other thing that Jennifer said, that you're using this as a slush fund for political gain?
Absolutely not. Like, there's 2.6 million people working in this country who have generated this income. we've set the policy parameters in place to make ourselves a pro-enterprise country, to have that strong economy. And as a party of enterprise and reward, Fine Gael believe that you have to reward the people who have generated that income to some extent, while also having your anti-austerity fund, while also having your investment in housing, supporting those on fixed incomes and all the rest. But the point that Jennifer makes there, if you look at the Social Democrats' manifesto in the last election, if you look at their submission to the Commission on Taxation, nowhere there, the only place there the taxation is talked about is increasing tax. So, you know, the opposition parties, to my view, you know, I'd love to hear what their priorities are and how does it spend. And that's the type of debate we have. And I think in a healthy democracy, this is a healthy thing to do.
Yeah, it's just interesting that you chose to do it, because when Pascal Donoghue was Minister for Finance, we never saw three Fianna Fáil junior ministers, one of whom is currently Jennifer Carroll McNeill in the Department of Finance, doing anything like this when he was in place.
But as I said to you, we're in that context here at a time in our country where we know for the next couple of years we have this very large surplus. We didn't have that in previous years where we can have this discussion.
But there were other choices to be made at other budgets.
There is, you know, and we know this from how Irish cabinets have worked over the years. There is a sense amongst senior cabinet ministers that you do respect the turf, particularly in coalition, of other cabinet ministers. This turf has now moved to Fianna Fáil. Can you not see how they would legitimately see that this is a bid to grab the limelight and steer the policy, regardless of how pro-enterprise you are? I mean, are you suggesting that Fianna Fáil are not pro-enterprise? I think they'd be pretty annoyed if they thought you were.
Niamh, you'd have a valid point if the article was only about that tax measure. But our opinion piece was much broader than that. The tax measure has what got the focus. It's what a lot of people are obviously interested in because it does impact on everybody. But it's, you know, we talked about the housing crisis. We talked about the resources needed there. We talked about the National Development Plan ceilings that are currently under review by Minister Donoghue at the minute. We talked about that anti-austerity fund, which I think is a really important measure. I was first elected to the Dáil in 2011 into a government that had the Troika in charge, and we had to try and pull the economy back, getting our money to run the country from the lender of last resort. If we'd had an anti-austerity fund at that time, a pot of money that we didn't have to contract the economy at that time it would have made a huge difference.
Did you over-egg the numbers, just to come back to that point, the 1.9 million people?
No.
643,000 people have that marginal rate of 40%. Now, we know that there will be more because there'll be households included in that figure. Yep. But to bring it up to 1.9 million is stretching it, isn't it?
No, because our taxation system is progressive. So 1.9 million people would benefit from this progressively, depending on up to the middle income earners. Obviously, as you say, the 630,000 are counted, couples and those in civil partnerships are counted as one.
But you've extrapolated from that up to 1.9 million is huge.
No, but our progressive nature of our tax system means that 1.9 million people would be better off, would have more of their hard-earned money back in their pocket by this intervention. That's very accurate.
Jennifer, you want to come in there. Jennifer,
I just want to just make a point. Martin speaks about rewarding taxpayers and giving them money back and putting it into their pockets. Social Democrats, our policy is very, very clear. We believe that to reward people, you do it through investing in the services, investing in health services, investing in education, investing in all those things that actually people rely on a daily basis. Because if you don't do that, people end up paying for healthcare. That's an indirect tax in itself. You know, they'll end up paying for grinds for their children, or, you know, so there's all these indirect taxes that people actually have to pay now. Whereas if the government used the money that's there to actually invest in infrastructure, invest in services that everyone can avail of, that is the absolute best way.
Did they not talk about that in the piece though as well, Martin, and you can confirm this for us, that there was an element of spending on services here as well?
Completely. I didn't want to interrupt Jennifer's point, but you can do both. And we talk about, like, we outlined the view of Fine Gael that we want to invest in the future, we want to save for the future, and we want to plan for it as well. And that's through building more homes, schools, hospitals, transport links, and that's where the National Development Plan ceilings come in. But the main point on tax here is that you have to look at the threats to our economy as well. And this isn't just about rewarding people, and it's definitely not a slush fund or a view like that. This is actually the smart way to position Ireland. It's the right thing to do when you consider the amount of our economy is dependent
on foreign
direct investment.
But you've been told time and again not to spend one-off income on changing things that you're going to have to pay for over years, like tax cuts.
And I've talked about what we do with the one-off element of that income. But you know, corporation tax is, what, 22 billion euro? Income tax is 30 billion. That is the key driver of our economy here. And we're, it, the huge threat to our economy here is that we are an outlier by international standards, that the highest rate of tax kicks in for Irish workers much earlier than by other international
But in
comparators.
Fairness, Martin...
And we are in a trajectory of trying to rise that up.
If you look at the IDA communications that have come out in the last 6 months, and particularly the projects they've lost... They will say it's because of problems with our transport, our energy, our water infrastructure.
Which we're investing.
And the wonderful thing about spending money, wherever it came from, that we have on that is that that is one-off. You know, if you build a road, it's built. OK, it has to be maintained.
It's not either or. We have outlined there how you do this in different ways, but we think...
But it is about the relativities and all... I mean, it's interesting. If you look at the budgets, because I've been on the budget panels for the last couple of years and always in the run-up to budgets, Fine Gael, Fleadh Cuilts about taxes, but actually always when the budgets land under Pascal Donoghue and Michael McGrath, they have always favoured public spending because of the healthcare crisis, because of the housing crisis.
But we have
throwing money... interestingly at a number of those issues hasn't solved them, which I think
and
is really the bigger question from my point of view.
We have a challenge around capacity in our economy because we've got full employment now, an unemployment rate of 3.9%. Money isn't the constraint for disability services, not our constraint for housing. Our ability to capacity issues in the economy are there. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the investing in people, in our 2.6 million workers around the country and the 1.9 million people that would benefit here, there are very clear economic reasons for that.
Elaine?
And just to make the point that this is the progressive nature of 2 years ago, it was 400 euro. Last year, workers benefited by 830
euro. Maybe this is something that Martin might be able to answer, but maybe one of the reasons why Fine Gael is pushing
that.
Maybe that might be the next coalition.
Definitely not. One thing you'd be sure of.
Maybe the reason why Fine Gael is pushing this so much is they know, or you know, that Leo Varadkar's ask from last year of a third level of income tax won't be introduced in this budget either.
No, and Leo has always said very clearly that he's not wedded to how it's done. But the Fine Gael position has been, and we got this.
He was pretty clear last year that he wanted that other rate.
But he was very
clear.
The
30% rate, yes.
As a possible way of supporting the squeezed middle, the middle income earners that are outside of that net of supports, a proposal was around 30%. He had said himself he wasn't wedded to how it was done, whether it was a 30%, whether it's the bands, whether it's the credit, or whether it's a mixture of those. But our approach has always been that the highest rate of income tax kicks in here for people who are earning 40,000 euro. That was lower. We got it up to 40,000. Okay. We want to get it to 50,000 euro.
Elaine, can I ask you about the response to this? Because Willie O'Dea was critical in part of his own party's response. He feels that they added fuel to the fire. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, well, certainly it's something that Fianna Fáil have been speaking about, both publicly and privately. We know that there was a good bit of discussion at that parliamentary party meeting where the Taoiseach intervened and said that Martin and his two colleagues were wrong to go out and write their opinions in a national newspaper, and it should be done behind the scenes, and that Minister McGrath should be given the respect that he deserves to hammer out a budget. So it certainly has irked Fianna Fáil. And you'd wonder what the next budget line is going to be. Will it be from Fianna Fáil wanting to do the same to their partners in coalition?
Look, coalition will be fine. We're all still talking to each other.
But that's the whole point. I think because the coalition has been relatively calm, I think we are going to see a jostling now in the run-up to the election to define the distinctiveness of identity. And I have to say, I actually expected the early doors action here to come from Fianna Fáil, because to create manoeuvrability for them to perhaps coalesce with other partners in the next government. It's interesting actually that it's Fine Gael.
So you stole a march on Fianna Fáil. You're probably proud of doing that. And we heard reports from your own...
Our view was not about Fianna Fáil or any other party.
Well, now, at your own parliamentary party meeting, we heard that lots of people supported you. But Michael Creed, what he said about Fianna Fáil, that you shouldn't as a party take lectures from those who crashed the economy and are still on probation when it comes to fiscal probity. Did you agree with him there?
So I was in the Dáil chamber for most of the parliamentary party meeting because we had the food regulator.
I didn't hear it. Excuse. Did you support him or not? I think he's right.
No, look, there's been some sharp comments made on both sides in the emotion of the last few days, and I think, you know, that's an extreme view and point. We have a good coalition partnership there. We're working together on joint initiatives for the betterment of people. But the general principle of us as a coalition partner articulating clearly in an opinion piece what Fine Gael core values are and what our priorities are heading into these budget negotiations, I think that's very healthy in a democracy, and I don't think that's a bad thing.
Well, there was a promise from Willie O'Dea for a bit of pushback. You know, if you're going to tell them how to spend the money, they won't be too shy about telling you.
If that's how it's perceived that they were told, it's not that. Like, that's a perception that might be...
Look at what the Minister for Finance said. I will not be bullied by Fine Gael.
So I think, in fairness, that was answered to a leading question, maybe. But the general point here is, I don't believe there's anything wrong with a coalition party outlining what their key priorities are. And we were reflecting the view of our TDs and our senators, of our councillors all around the country. Fine Gael does.
But surely the fact that you did it in public rather than did it in private suggests that really the target audience there were not your colleagues in Fianna Fáil, but actually your own voter base.
Absolutely, Fianna Fáil were not our target audience here. But the general point here is...
you'll be negotiating the budget with Fianna Fáil.
But it's in the context of this very large surplus that we have for these couple of years, this brilliant opportunity we've managed to create through the hard work of the people.
Jennifer,
all parties in the Dáil should have that conversation.
If only Fine Gael spent as much time discussing the Bernardo's report, the cost of living crisis, the energy crisis,
we do.
The fact that we have
billions
so many children in poverty, parents can't feed their children and heat their homes. If only so much time was being spent by Fine Gael discussing those issues, maybe those issues wouldn't be.
Because there was a sense, wasn't there, that with the energy interventions and the problems that we had over the winter with energy costs, that a lot of those cost of living problems were dealt with. Now, we saw from the Bernardo's report that coming into the summer, there are going to be huge problems, Jennifer, for people who can't put food on the table, quite frankly.
Yeah, and I think it comes back to, again, it's I suppose, political ideology as to how you deal with an issue. You know, in the Social Democrats, we believe you deal with the actual issue, the systems that need to be changed. But I think Fine Gael's approach is more to give money to the symptoms. So, you know, when we had the energy crisis, it was to give tax or to give a credit.
The once-off measures
That went, universally and they weren't targeted. And we've seen that hasn't actually worked, because if they had worked, we wouldn't have so many people who were at risk of disconnection. We wouldn't have so many people who were in arrears at the moment. And the thing about this, we have a lot of people who are carrying the baggage from the last winter, and we're going to be heading into another very difficult winter. So what we need from the government now is actually to be focusing on this particular point in time, because I think when it comes to heating and energy, you know, the pressures aren't as severe from that perspective. We need government to be using these intervening months to actually come up with systems and targeted measures that will be able to help, but also to look at the long-term issues that need to be addressed. You know, the energy resilience, how do we make homes more resilient? You know, Social Democrats have been calling for a long time now for, a greater government intervention in solar panels. 1 million houses in the country are suitable for solar panels. If people had them on their homes, it would reduce their energy costs by 40%. So if you had 1 million households whose annual energy costs were down 40%, we would be in a much better situation from a consumer perspective, but also when it comes to our grid. We have completely, and governments have completely failed to invest in the grid over decades.
Yeah, but the people we heard about there are not probably most of them in the market for solar panels, because they're living in apartments and they're putting coins into meters.
That has been one of the big difficulties with a lot of the climate and sustainability measures around, insulating your home, etc., that it does require an outlay from the householder themselves, and apart from the fact that the people doing it are completely oversubscribed, that the houses that most struggle with this, which are the deprived households, are the ones who are least capable of actually providing that kind of outlay. One of the interesting things I think we're seeing, Claire, because during the winter in particular, I think there was a lot of focus on the elderly and around the choice between heating or eating, because heating is particularly important for elderly people during the winter. Now that we're moving into the summer, and I think we're seeing a very clearly in both Bernardo's and Safe Food, the focus is looping very much more onto parents with young children in those really tough, stratified groups who are, as Jennifer says, carrying these legacy energy bills, but also are now facing into a summer, which is an expensive time for parents because kids are off school. They lose a lot of the kind of softer benefits of the school system that the schools bring with them. They're trying to entertain kids, clothe kids, and then they're facing into books and uniforms and all the rest of it. So parents tend to be very much in the eye of the storm in terms of cost of living in the summer when it's less about energy issues. Now, some progress has been made in these issues, but I really think to go back to the question of the money that's available, what I would like to see is more targeted supports for those. I mean, if you're on a fixed income, which is a social welfare income, the way in which you're going to be affected by a 700 or 800 euro energy bill is not the same as somebody who's going to benefit in a significant way from a 1,000 euro tax credit. Do you know what I mean? I'm not saying somebody doesn't deserve a 1,000 euro tax credit, but would I rather see somebody who has to choose between feeding their child get that benefit as opposed to somebody? It's great to have the 1,000 euro tax credit, but we know there are parents right now who are choosing. I'm involved in a lot of food poverty organisations in Limerick City, and they would say they in this year they never saw things as bad on the ground in this year. And in terms of free school meals, food parcels, we are giving food parcels to students at the moment. It has never been, in terms of food poverty, as pronounced as it has been in the last 9 months. Mm-hmm.
Puts things into context, Martin, hearing that, doesn't it?
Like, that's why we've had a series of interventions that have been both one-off and also then the increase in the social welfare rates by 12 euro, the increase in the working family payment, the supports. But it's also why we're doing longer-term pieces like Minister Humphreys and her initiative around hot school meals. 2019, that started as a pilot with 300 schools, and now it's going to be nationwide, and it's not just going to be DESH schools and special schools, it's going to be broader than that. If you look at what Joe McHugh
started. But again, I mean, it's that problem with the summer, isn't it? And we heard when it was suggested that they should be continued over the summer months, the immediate government reaction was we can't do that, rather than trying to find a way to do it.
Logistically, it's very hard. As the first thing to do, it's very hard. It's where we would like to get to. But, you know, if you talk about the back to school allowance, we've changed and increased the rates on that. School books is a point that Niamh has made here as something that's a huge concern. I have 4 young kids at home, and I know the cost of it. We've made that change now. Joe McHugh started it as a pilot, and we now have under Minister Foley free school books for all primary school children going into this September, which is going to be a massive saving.
We started the week talking about migrant accommodation and the big problems that the government is facing there, and these flotels are back on the agenda, Elaine.
They are, and it was something that was offered to the government last year and ruled out. There were approaches made to government to perhaps have a massive cruise ship docked at Dublin port that could take hundreds of Ukrainians at a time, but that was ruled out. It was ascertained that Dublin port didn't have the capacity to have one of these massive liners docked there. But it does seem to be that it's back on the agenda, and I suppose it shows how acute the problem is now. One concern, I suppose, that could be raised in relation to this is if you have hundreds of people docked on a ship, they're not going into any communities. They're not going to be, welcomed into whether it's the local town or the local village, because they're literally on a ship in a dock.
We've very limited time left. Are you, Martin Hayden, in favour of that as a solution?
As one part of a step, we're looking at every opportunity there that there is to increase capacity for shelter.
Completely cut these people off. I mean, I am in favour. In fairness, the using office blocks to get people out of tents and off the streets, I think, is necessary, and I think it should be done. But flotels, like, have we learned nothing from institutionalising generations of people, both Irish and not Irish people? Like, the potential for behavioural issues, for health problems inside in a flotel where there's very little oversight, where people have no connections with the community.
As a long-term measure,
it's a disaster waiting to happen.
As a long-term measure, it wouldn't be preferable, but I'm just saying, in the context of up to recent years, we had 3,000-4,000 people a year come to our shores seeking refuge. We now have 100,000 people. And do I think this is, in general, something I'd like to see happen? No. In the context of people in tents, because we can't provide shelter, we have international obligations.
Go.
We have to look
gotta
at every option open.
All right, we've got to leave it there. Thank you all for coming in today, and have a lovely weekend. And that goes for you at home listening as well. Today's programme was produced by Rachel Graham, researched by Emma Cawley. Jareth Holland is our broadcast coordinator. Gar Duffy was on sound. The series producer is Alistair McConnell. We'll talk to you on Monday at 10. It's over to Louise.